You'll remember back in 2018, the murder, the tragic murder of 21-year-old British backpacker Grace Mullane. It really gripped the country. Now, there's a powerful new feature-length film, The Lie, which explores how the shocking case highlights disturbing attitudes about violence towards women. It painstakingly pieces together Grace's final evening, stepping through the evidence the police used to make the case against her killer. The film also examines the controversial rough sex defence, which was used at the trial of Jesse Kempson, who was convicted of Grace's murder. Now, I spoke with the documentary's director, Helena Cohen, and Detective Inspector Scott Beard, who led the investigation which brought Jesse Kempson to justice. And I started by asking Helena, why did Grace Mullane's case compel her to make a film about it?
I felt that she had been portrayed in a certain light after her murder that was so unfair, and that I think spoke to a wider issue around violence against women and how everyone tries to blame the victim themselves rather than looking at the bigger problems that contribute to those murders happening. I grew up not far from where Grace lived. I have friends who went to school with her. I remember the case very clearly, and it just is something that's always stuck with me, and I felt like I wanted to make sure her truth was told in the best way possible.
And so I guess that perhaps preempts some of another question I wanted to ask, which was, what were you setting out to do with the film? What did you want to create?
I wanted to create a film that had a lot of empathy in it and just basically showed you the night in question and didn't try and kind of lecture you or tell you what to think or how to feel, but just to show you a young girl on a date, a first date, which, you know, we've all hopefully been on. And you can tell just by watching the footage how excited and happy she was. You know, she was on the other side of the world by herself, having the time of her life on her birthday. And I wanted to show just the innocence of that and the fear that so many women live with, that this could happen to us. I didn't want it to be kind of a diatribe or to tell people how to think. I just wanted to show it and to immerse yourself in it.
What was the appetite for the film when you took the idea out to try to get backing and to try to get people who would make it? Was there a significant appetite there? Were people keen, or did people kind of shy away a bit?
With anything like this, it's always that question of, you know, well, I can speak from my own experience. I've been asked to do what you would classify as true crime before, and I've said no because I felt like there wasn't a point to it. But with this, I wanted to do it because I felt, like I said, that her story had not been told properly, and I still was seeing so much victim blaming, not just with Grace, but with other victims of murder whose perpetrators had then used the rough sex defence. So when we were it was more my producers, Matthew and Tom and Leslie, that were more in charge of kind of pitching it out to people. But I think there was a bit of hesitancy from my producers as well, you know, to try and from me to touch this story, because it's got to be done in such a sensitive and compassionate way, but also an honest way too.
And Scott, to come to you on this, take us back to those early days. We see the early days on screen in this documentary. What was it like from your perspective to be beginning down the road that would ultimately lead to the murder conviction?
Well, yes, it came reported as a missing person. And the one thing I want to say here, Susie, is I know a lot of people commented on, you know, here's an English girl in New Zealand and she gets all the publicity, a woman in New Zealand murdered gets little publicity. And the reason for that is we were dealing with a missing person case. And so we can go out to the media, we can put a lot of stuff out there. Where usually a family violence homicide, you know the offender, and they're caught within 24 hours. And so there's little to go out to the media. So, of course, with Grace, she's an English girl in New Zealand. So the media, the English media, the New Zealand media, it was a big story. And, you know, there was pressure, getting a team together. You just knew there's so many red flags in the initial report that this had to be taken seriously from the very start. We had to have a team. And, of course, like I've always said, in the city, the CCTV is huge, so you've got to get a lot of staff to be able to deal with that. So, yes, there was some pressure. It was more, from my personal perspective, the media pressure. It was unbelievably tough. But the investigation team, I've always said, did a fantastic job. All of them in their different roles. You know, they came together and we worked some long hours over a few days and got, you know, the right result, certainly for the family and for Grace.
I remember the early days of this investigation and the many appearances and interviews that you did and put in. And it did seem that there was something about this that had got under your skin.
Yeah, I don't know if it was something that got under my skin. I think it was possibly, you know, we worked some long hours, so there wasn't a lot of sleep. There was a lot of media pressure, which, yeah, I put a little bit of pressure then on the investigation team. Come on, we've got to get this done. Let's move as quick as we can. So to say, those long hours. And it was just, I think it was a sad case. You know, as I said in one of my interviews, you know, I had a daughter in her 20s. So you have to feel with the family. And I was personally dealing with David Mullane, who'd flown over as well. Mm. And while I need to remain objective, ensure we do a proper, thorough investigation, you're also touched by that. You can't help but be touched. He was over here by himself. His brother arrived a day or two later. But, yeah, we had to be a support. We had to be like the family around him because it was really tough for him.
Mm.
And particularly with Jill's health back in the UK.
Grace's death should have been prevented. I know that's something that you have spoken about previously. What do you mean by that?
Look, I think the reality is with the highlight of Grace's death is, and I talk a little bit about stranger danger and keeping ourselves safe, which is promoted in the schools. And, you know, it's for the young people in the schools, but I think when people get to those teenage years and a bit older and they're going out socialising, it's the same thing, that stranger danger, that keeping ourselves safe. It's just like drink spiking in bars. It's happening all the time. People just have to be aware. Don't leave your drink alone and go away and come back to it. And I think with Grace's case, you know, she did nothing wrong. You know, Tinder is the way people meet a lot of times these days. There's nothing wrong with that. It was Jesse Kempson. He was the murderer. Full stop.
But is something broken in society that this was the case, as you say, people who were meeting, yes, online, but, you know, were meeting in the real world and going out and having a first date. Is something broken that this was the outcome?
Well, the outcome here, and we still see it with our adult sexual assault team world where, you know, number of complaints arise out of first off one-off Tinder dates. Now, that's something that, you know, I say that education, that prevention, but most Tinder dates are fine. Most of those dating apps are fine and there's no issues. But it's just that small, small minority, and of course it comes to the attention, and in Grace's case, it was highlighted internationally.
Mm. How can people meet safely? Because as you say, this is how people meet.
I think, you know, you talk about meeting in public for the first time, just not sort of going to someone's house for the first time to meet them. Because I think in this day and age with just the attitudes, you know, access to pornography, attitudes of some young males, is that they think a Tinder date is consent for sex, and it's not.
Coming back to you, Helena, it's called The Lie. What is the lie that the title refers to?
The lie ultimately refers to this lie that women who are killed in this way are responsible for their own deaths. And to me, the biggest lie, obviously, is are the lies Kempson told. But the rough sex defence was a big reason why I wanted to make this film, because I see that as the ultimate lie, that she could, if only she had done something differently, she would still be alive. I think it's just a lie that we perpetuate in order to tackle the bigger problems that lead to men that kill young women who are otherwise just trying to live their lives freely. And I might, I'm an optimist in that sense, and I hope I'm a bit of a realist as well, but I like to think that young women and women of all ages can lead happy, safe lives and not be at risk of this kind of violence, and then to be dragged through court in the way that Grace was.
Mm. Before we get to the trial and how that all played out, I suppose, how did you, when you were making the film, make decisions about whose story to tell, whose story to centre here? And how then to do that?
Well, we interviewed lots of people that actually didn't end up in the film. And I just really wanted to focus on Grace and on the other women that came into contact with Kempson, notably his ex-partner who's in the film, and also the woman who he went on a Tinder date with the day after he killed Grace. And it just felt really important to me to centre these women's voices and almost link them all to Grace, and kind of like an army of women saying, no, this is the man that he was. This was not her fault. She didn't know who he truly was because he was so good at hiding it. So I really wanted to centre their stories, and of course Scott's voice as well, who was, not only such an important contributor in this film, but to me on a personal level as well. You know, this was a very, very hard film to make, and watching that footage every day for 9 months was not an easy task. And to have somebody as compassionate and as understanding as Scott kind of by my side, kind of talking me through it all, was also just invaluable. I couldn't have done it without him.
Mm. Yeah, we see an awful lot of the CCTV footage, certainly more, I suspect, than has ever been seen before. And certainly when you see it all together, when you get that full sense of the story unfolding detail by detail, it's pretty unflinching.
Yeah, and I wanted it to feel unflinching as well, because it is, and I don't, I want to show exactly what happened so that hopefully we can learn from it and understand it more. But also, to show, as I say, this threat, this burden, silent burden that women carry with us, that this could happen to us. It's something very real for a lot of women. And I hope men watch this film and understand the heaviness of that and how it affects our choices. And, think about how women, when you're out with your girlfriend, you say, make sure you text me when you get home safely, and or just all of those little things that all add up to build this bigger picture that we're not safe. And I want to change that.
Yeah, Scott, when you were seeing the CCTV, I mean, you would have seen this as the investigation unfolded, kind of in real time, I suppose, the CCTV trail of where they went and what picture that painted. What was it like for you to watch that happening? Because certainly from my perspective as someone who's not in the police service, there are quite a few moments that are pretty frightening, that are pretty creepy. What's your take on it?
Yeah, CCTV, as we said, was huge. And so many different aspects of the CCTV. So obviously we could put them, obviously Grace leaving the backpackers, Kempson when he had a drink and heading to Sky City, them meeting. But also it was so crucial in that first interview of Kempson, where, he lied to us about what happened and what time he woke up the next day. And it was during that interview, one of the CCTV phaser's staff had got the City Life Hotel, which showed him walking out, or coming back in with the suitcase at 8:15 on the Sunday morning. So the CCTV, I didn't personally see it all at the time because I was so busy, A, dealing with the media, just making sure the investigation's running properly, and it wasn't until later that we put it all together. But I think the saddest part for me is the last time you see Grace come out of the lift at City Life Hotel. That's the last time you see her alive. And that's really tough, and it's really tough on the family.
Helena Cohen and D.I. Scott Beard are my guests this morning on Saturday Morning with Susie Ferguson here on RNZ National. We're talking about the new film charting the case of the Grace Mullane murder. It's called The Lie. Yeah, Helena, talking about the family, this was something that you wanted to make sure that the family gave their blessing to this film being made.
Yeah, that was essential for me. I wouldn't have made, if Grace's mother had turned around and said, please don't make this, then I absolutely would not have made it. But I liaised with her throughout the making of the film through Scott. I just always wanted to make sure she knew what we were doing, and there was no kind of announcement in the press or something before she knew about it. And, you know, we needed her blessing for Scott to pass on all the CCTV footage and evidence and police interview tapes and all of that. So, yeah, it was the most important thing to me. If she had turned around and said, don't make it, I wouldn't ever have done it.
Mm. And this is a feature-length true crime film, which is that sort of beginning to become a new genre that we're seeing?
I think there's definitely been a rise in, obviously, true crime in general over the past few years. I think a lot of stories are serialised, I think probably unnecessarily. I think there is obviously an interest in these kind of stories. And as I said, like I've never done a story like this before. Like my background is in generally documentaries about women. I did a documentary about Audrey Hepburn, one about the boxer Nicola Adams, and then I make narrative projects as well. So it's not something that I'm kind of, it's not a world that I'm in, or I'm not, you know, I don't see myself as like a true crime director. I want to tell stories about women who have been misrepresented or misunderstood, to tell us more about them and to learn more about, the society that we find ourselves in.
Mm. And you mentioned the rough sex defence, which was the one that was taken by the defence when the trial unfolded, and we see some of that in the documentary. Mm. Why is that such a red line for you?
I think I'll be a lot more forthcoming about this than maybe Scott can be, but I think it's abhorrent. I think it is the most offensive use of the justice system. You can't ban a defence, and nor should you be able to. It would, you know, ruin the justice system. But the fact that this can be used based on just evidence that doesn't make any sense is just abhorrent to me. And unfortunately, Grace's case is just one of many, and there have been women murdered in the most awful circumstances by men who just chose to kill them, whose names have been dragged through the courts as essentially she asked for it. And I think it is a very clever and manipulative way of just harping on that same tune that she asked for it. And essentially that's what the defense lawyer in this case said in court, is he literally said he was just doing what she wanted him to do, or what she asked him to do. And I think the fact that that's allowed is disgusting.
Yeah, Scott, I wanted to ask you about this, and I'm not sure how much you can say about it, but is that defence, the rough sex defence, is that still a reasonable route to take?
If you're a RA defence counsel, and that's how your client describes it, then yes, you're entitled in New Zealand to use rough sex defence. As I've said publicly, I don't agree with it, as Alan's explained. And you can see in the UK, the rough sex defence has been banned. Where in New Zealand, we actually did have a law change in 2021 around sexual violence and the cross-examination and what lawyers can ask victims of sexual violence, which I know it's not a murder, but it goes a little way towards the banning of the rough sex defence, because it is difficult for the victims of sexual crime in court to be cross-examined. And so now judges can curtail exactly what defence are asking them, which is a great step in the right direction. But in terms of when it comes to the murder cases, yeah, I see it in this case as a cop-out.
A cop-out, why?
Well, you can't strangle someone for 5 to 10 minutes and say that was rough sex. You feel them going limp. You'll know. And I'm sorry, it's murder.
Do you know what led to the banning of the defence in the UK?
I think there was a campaign over there, and I know Gillian Mullane and family got in behind that campaign. And, you know, it was put through, you know, the House of Lords, where it is over there, how they do it. And, yeah, it was banned. And I think when people see the lie, and at the end, the number of victims that they show, it's pretty chilling.
Is this something that New Zealand should be looking at to ban as well, to consign to the history books?
No, it's not for me. That's for parliamentarians within the justice world to look at, you know, our legislation and stuff like that.
I get that, but equally you are, a top police officer in this country who I'm sure has seen much more than just this particular case, and it would seem to be, when you're using language like it's a cop-out and the like, that would be a view you might hold.
Look, we've seen a lot of our sexual violation complaints come in where there's strangulation, where there's physical assaults, and I think some of that is the access to pornography that young people have these days. And it creates problems, because just take young teenagers who can see this, you know, they can access Pornhub from a young age on their phone, and to them that's the norm. But when they meet a girl and the girl says no, they're not accepting that no, because that's not what they think is right. And that's the thing, you know, a female can say no whenever she likes, and the male has to listen to that, because if they don't, then there's no consent. It's unfortunate, and there's not too many homicides in New Zealand that I'm aware of where the rough sex defence has been used. Obviously, this Grace's case highlighted it. And so, yeah, I would be asking that if people were looking at it, that we ban it.
Helena, coming back to you on the victimisation and the re-victimisation of Grace, which happened as part of the trial, and the detail of that as it unfolds feels very unfair. It feels somewhat like a horror film in a way, the way that it comes out piece by piece by piece. And of course, she's not there to answer for it. She's not there to make any argument. And it's her family that are left to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this kind of is a real-life horror film, if you like. It's seeing someone be just, yeah, blamed and torn apart, and they're not there to say, hang on a minute, no, this is not what happened. And luckily there were other victims of Kempson's who could come forward and say this is who he was and were able to stand up for her. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes in these cases where the rough sex defence is used, there aren't those voices, and the victim is just is kind of desecrated in front of their family, and it's awful. So I think I just wanted to really play it out beat by beat to see what the lawyers tried to do, and how unfair it was, and how ultimately, luckily, it didn't work, but sometimes it does. There's the story of Natalie Connolly here in the UK, who was murdered, and her murderer received, I think it was 2 years in jail, and just got away with murder. And it's very scary that you can be murdered, full stop, and then that you can be blamed for it. So I wanted to kind of lean into the horror of that and to show how unfair she was treated.
Susie, can I just say here, you know, during the High Court murder trial, I sat next to Gillian and David Mullane, and, you know, when the defence came up, and particularly around the rough sex questioning, you know, Gillian was beside me crying and sobbing. She had to listen to what they were saying, and that's that re-victimisation, not only of her daughter, but of the family. And believe me, it was tough sitting there with her, because, you know, they'd come from the UK to the trial, and she was determined to stay in the court, because a couple of times I said, look, do you need to go out? And she was determined to stay, but it was so tough for her.
I was going to ask you about that because I know that you did spend a lot of time with them, and I'm not asking you to betray any confidences because, you know, clearly there are sensitivities here that we have to be alive to. But I guess how grueling for the family was that trial?
Oh, it was so tough. They flew in on the Saturday, trial was going to start Monday. On the Sunday, I brought them into my office and we went through the case for them. And just in my office, you know, they saw for the first time the CCTV footage of Grace getting out of the lift for the last time. Yeah, and of course, broke down. And then they have to sit through the trial. And we were preparing them each day for what witnesses were going to be called and what evidence they were going to be given, just to prepare them. But it doesn't matter how much preparation you give, you know, it's always going to be tough. It's their daughter. She's never going to be coming back. And they had to live through that. And I think, for me, the stress of it all is what caught up with David.
Mm. Yeah, because he died of cancer in 2020, I think. Did you know the rough sex defence was coming? Was that something you were able to talk them through?
Yes, well, the interview, certainly the second interview of Kempson, and that's what they raised. So, yes, we knew it was coming. And so, yes, we were able to talk, but we don't know what questions the defence are going to specifically ask. We know they're going to raise the rough sex defence. And as I say, it was so tough for Gillian and both David as well.
In your time as a police officer, how have you seen attitudes change towards this kind of thing, towards either women coming forward with complaints or indeed in these kinds of cases where there are murders, where it's not so, you know, where it's his word against hers, or, you know, she was asking for it, all these kinds of things. How much have attitudes moved in the police?
Oh, look, in the police, I think they've moved well on from when I first joined the police and joined the criminal investigation branch back in the 1980s. And, you know, we do so much more now for the victims of sexual violence, whether it be children or adults, you know, in terms of we have specialist interviewers who are trained to deal with them. We have rooms that are set up that are, you know, the victim-friendly. And, as I say, both for children and adults. And, you know, they are allowed to now have their DVD interviews used as their evidence in chief in court, so they don't have to sit there and that. Yes, they do have to be there for cross-examination. Sometimes they can be outside the courtroom. They don't have to be in the court. So I think we have moved so far from where we were when I first joined.
Mm. A last word to you on this, Helena. What sort of resonance do you hope that this film has for women, but also for men?
I think this, you know, the intended audience of this film is men, and I know women will watch it too, and I know that they have already. But I want men to understand this threat that all of us live with, and that we ultimately want to solve. No one wants these things to happen, and you know, the majority of men are good men that don't want these things to happen. And it's trying to portray how something as, you know, innocent and fun and normal as a first date can turn into something so tragic because of one man's actions. And there's nothing that Grace did or any woman in this situation did that could change that. He chose to kill her, and that is it. And I hope by portraying it and structuring the film in the way I have, that people can see that, you know, there's no, it's unflinching, as you say. It's played out step by step, and people are able to see how these things can unfold, and hopefully we can learn from this and do something to stop these kind of crimes happening again. And also, I think empathy changes the world, and I want people to feel empathy for Grace and for her family, and to understand that this is not just a, you know, true crime story. This was a brilliant woman's life that was taken from her. And I, you know, I'll never meet Grace, but I spent a lot of time reading her tweets and on her Instagram, and she just seemed like someone I would have got along with. And she was very funny and very outgoing and just seemed to love life. And these crimes are not just crimes, and I think true crime documentaries have the tendency to boil them down to that. This was somebody's life, and she should still be here, and it was not her fault. And I hope that ultimately that's what resonates with audiences.
That is the director, Helena Cohen, of The Lie, this feature-length documentary, which is going to be released in cinemas on April the 25th. We were also speaking there with Detective Inspector Scott Beard, who, of course, led the investigation into Grace Mullane's murder. And there is going to be a special screening of The Lie at the Rialto Newmarket on Monday the 29th of April at 6 o'clock. That's going to be followed with a Q&A with Scott Beard and also Debbie Tohill from Rape Prevention Education. The Lie is released in cinemas on April the 25th, so next week.